Well, the defense contracting community is kind of in a holding pattern right now because of all the uncertainty generated by sequestration and the government shutdown. Some tough decisions being made now in the planning and process for fiscal 2014. My guest to talk about that issue on Industry Chatter today is David Melcher. He's the Chief Executive Officer and President of Excellus. And David, it's great to have you here in the studio. Thanks very much for coming in to talk to me today.
Thanks, Francis.
My friend Steve Grundman was on the program last week and talking about the conversation that you and he had at the Atlantic Council as part of his Captains of Industry series that he's starting. You have a really unique perspective on this dynamic because you have a long career in the military in uniform. We'll talk about that in a minute, but give me the kind of the thumbnail to start, as we always do, about what Excellus does for customers in the federal space.
Well, Excellus is a company of about $5 billion annual revenues that's an aerospace and defense company. We're 2 years with the name Excellus as a public company on the New York Stock Exchange, but we come from actually a 50-year heritage as a defense company with ITT Corporation. And the kind of things that we do, we're a very diversified defense company. We do everything from satellite payloads to radios to night vision goggles, manage large networks, information and cybersecurity, and so forth. And so a company that presents a lot of capabilities for the government.
So you're embedded in military operations, and you're seeing firsthand, first of all, what sequestration did inside the Pentagon, and also now seeing what the shutdown is doing and the interactions going on there. It strikes me that over the last 10 days to maybe 2 weeks, as we started to really anticipate that shutdown was going to happen, the conversation around sequestration's almost entirely disappeared. It's the shutdown's really sucked all the oxygen out of the room. Is that a good idea, or is that something that we should be focusing on, understanding that eventually the government will reopen again?
Well, you know, the fact is that sequestration has not gone away. It is the law. It was enacted in last year's budget, and I suspect it'll be part of this year's budget as well. Although we tend to be moving from crisis to crisis, and the latest one being lack of a continuing resolution and the debt ceiling issue.
How does a company in your position try to strategize with the tremendous amount of uncertainty that exists, not just budget-wise, but as Steve and I talked about when he was here last week, the Pentagon's in the middle of policy reassessments and trying to figure out how they're going to move forward, determining what inventory is going to look like, especially in weapon systems and the kinds of things your company does. And so that's more uncertainty that you have to plan around on top of the budget issues.
Well, it is. And in terms of developing a strategy for the company, I mean, we go back to what do we believe are our customers' needs. And those things are articulated by the Department of Defense in its planning documents. They're reinforced by marks on the Hill that you see in budget documents and so forth. And then for us, we look at our core capabilities, which are electronic warfare, critical networks, intelligence, surveillance and reconnaissance, and air structure composites. And those are the things that we decide that we're going to continue to invest in to try and promote capabilities that are needed. It's really a game of trying to control the things that you can control within your domain as opposed to the things you can't, which is the federal budget situation.
Yeah, and you can control what your company does, and you can control what your people do and what your workforce looks like.
Right.
All of those things are things that are albeit up in the air. We're seeing some of your competitors that are having to make workforce decisions and such. How do you strategize? I guess I'm still... It's still unclear to me how you are able to do the things that you're talking about with the amount of uncertainty that exists.
Well, you know, we generally run scenarios. And in this environment, you can run a base case scenario that says it could be the sequestration numbers. And so let's plan our programs in accordance with that. Could it be a little bit more positive? Perhaps, but that's a low likelihood. Could it be a little bit worse? Possibly, but that's also, I think, a very low likelihood. So planning on that figure moves you in certain directions as to where do you need to economize? Where do we have to be more competitive? And some of that will be done by reduced footprint. Some of it will be done with headcount reductions. Some of it will be done by investing in the right places. And so those are the choices that we can make as a business. But at the end of the day, they're all made with an eye towards being more competitive in an ever more competitive marketplace.
One thing that we're learning this afternoon that Ash Carter is leaving the Pentagon in December, but one of the things he talked about as ATL and now as Deputy Secretary is innovation. And Mr. Kendall's talked about innovation as well. What is your view of innovation and how you present innovation effectively to the Defense Department and other agencies that you work with to show them we understand what you're saying. We get what you're saying about cost containment, and this is how we plan to help you.
Well, you know, as a company, we invest our own research and development money in the places that we think have the greatest promise, you know, of future production or, you know, future offerings for the government. We do that armed with the knowledge that our customers are willing to give us, you know, in the conversations and forums and, you know, inter exchanges we have about what they believe their needs are. And, you know, the government funds a good amount of research and development as well. And so we try and be involved in a number of those programs to get some ideas about what the needs are. But then we're not shy about presenting our capabilities, going to experiments that are done by the government to try and demonstrate what we believe are affordable solutions for the future. And we happen to have a very large installed base of capability. And so right now, presenting alternatives to upgrade that capability as opposed to new or exquisite systems that are going to be very hard to afford is part of the game that we're in.
I like the term exquisite systems because it really gets at the core of what a lot of your colleagues, formerly in uniform, now retired and out of uniform, talk about. They loved having the capability that they needed when they were in uniform, but understand that that's not the way it's going to work moving forward.
Well, you know, you always want it to be an unfair fight to your advantage. And so, you know, every military person will want the best capabilities that give our forces an advantage over any potential adversary. Now, whether you can afford, you know, to make the next leap into something is an issue about what is the size of the program, how is it managed, and, you know, do you have the dollars in your budget to be able to get to where you want to be? So it's a risk-reward balance that is always being done by uniformed members and their civilian leadership.
You talked about the interactions with the agency and understanding what their needs are and anticipating what their needs are going to be. Is the tenor of those conversations or the level of the interactions or any of that changing because of the budget situation that we're in or any other extraneous factors?
Well, you know, the fact is we need more conversation about those requirements now, not less. And I think the truth is that everybody is so tied up in just trying to manage, you know, the crisis that is a government shutdown and the day-to-day events that are happening. It's harder to have those conversations, but we certainly need them. And I know industry asks for those conversations. And honestly, the enlightened leadership in the department understands they need to have those conversations.
The requirements process has been a tough one for the DOD for a long time. Do you see a light at the end of the tunnel that maybe is driven by this budget situation that maybe, and I like the term exquisite systems, but as that becomes less of a possibility or a probability, does that maybe have some impact on how the requirement process works, especially before development of systems begins?
I believe it is going to have an impact. You know, first of all, I think there are more inputs coming in from the field and the combatant commanders and the forces assigned to them, in terms of helping to define the near-term requirements that they have. Those are balanced with the longer-term goals that the department and the services have to bring on new capability, a new fighter, a new bomber, things like that. But at the end of the day, I think the resource tail is going to be wagging the requirements dog a little harder than it has done in the last decade.
What's the right balance, do you think, between the short-term, the combatant commander's requirements and wishes, and the long-term that you're talking about that's more inside the building focused, I would imagine?
You know, there is a need to have a balance because not every problem is the one you're trying to solve today. Some of the problems are the ones that are very complicated, emerging issues that you're going to have to deal with tomorrow. And so that's the role of the Secretariat and the uniform leadership in the Pentagon to try and maintain a balance between today's requirements and future's needs. And investment should follow the priorities that they establish.
And I imagine that balance, the balance point is different on every different procurement, every operation?
Absolutely. I mean, there are some systems in being today that would be deemed to be good enough for the next decade or two. And I think you're going to find more and more of those given the budget, you know, crunch. But there are some systems, F-35 would be an example, you know, that are perceived as being needed to bring the future capabilities that are required to, you know, counter what are perceived as the threats.
When you mention that, and I think of F-35 and I think of LCS, and I know they're not similar, But I think of the modularity and upgradability capabilities of each of those. Mm-hmm. And it occurs to me that that seems to be, if I were in your shoes, that's a trend that I would be anticipating and expecting to see a lot more of moving forward on just about every kind of platform possible. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think that's very fair to say. More modular designs, more open architectures, more ways of easily adapting commercial technologies. I think all that is going to be part of the picture going forward. But at the end of the day, there are still some unique military requirements, whether it's the extremes of condition that they're being, exercised in or whatnot, that will drive a little bit different perspective than just a purely commercial answer.
I asked you earlier about anticipating the needs of the Pentagon and so on, and one of the things that I hear over and over again, both from civilian and military leaders, is that we, and that's the collective defense community, the Pentagon and the defense industrial base, are not very good at predicting the future. Given that, adding that onto the layers that we've already talked about, how does that impact the way that you want to try to anticipate what your customer is going to need in the future?
Well, that's a good point, because some of the things that we work on inside of our company, for example, are a little bit, offbeat or maybe in a little different vein than you might normally think of. We try to take our cues from the military in terms of what the needs are, but for our company, for example, we're trying to branch out internationally and commercially into some other areas that maybe we start there and we bring that capability back to the department because it might have applicability.
David Melcher is my guest. He's the Chief Executive Officer and President of Excellus on Industry Chatter today, and we'll continue in a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. My guest is Dave Melcher. He's the President, Chief Executive Officer of Excellus for Industry Chatter today. And you have made an interesting transition that not a lot of people have made. Spent 32 years in the Army. You retired as a lieutenant general. And you're now leading this terrific company that you're telling me about. Tell me about that transition and what made you want to make that transition instead of doing any of the myriad other things that your peers do when they transition out of the service.
Well, I guess, when you go into the service and spend 32 years, you're committed to the principles that underlie that. You want to do something to, help your country. You want to do something to contribute. And I really felt that, for me, going into an industry that continued to support servicemen and women with capabilities was an important choice to make. And, I always tell our employees, before I was the president or CEO of this company, I was a customer and used the night vision capabilities and the radios and the jammers and understood the value that they brought to servicemen and women. So for me, it was a natural transition.
What's different about the business world that maybe you didn't expect when you went into it?
Well, when you're in government, you're trying to be efficient and effective, but the goal of which is to provide great capability to the taxpayer. When you're in business, you're beholden to your shareholders, and you have to find a way to be profitable and to return value to your shareholders. And so the profit orientation and, the notion that a business has to be successful in that way is certainly a different context that you have to rapidly get used to.
Mm-hmm. You're in a different position than some of the companies that you compete against. You compete against some of the biggest players in the defense space. How does that make the way that you run your company different than you think it would be if you were leading one of the big boys?
Well, as a mid-cap company, sometimes we have an opportunity to be a prime on a particular program, but more often than not, we're a subcontractor. And with respect to the big primes, we call them competimates because we compete with them, and yet we also partner with them. So virtually any of the big companies that are in this industry, we have some relationship with where we're helping to support them on a program that they are working. But in some cases, they may be a partner to us on a program that we're the prime contractor for. But I think that's natural because there is not enough, requirement today for all these programs, to allow every one of those companies to independently pursue things.
How does that manifest itself when you hear when Mr. Carter was ATL, Dr. Carter was ATL, and now Frank Kendall talks about shaping or managing the defense industrial base? Is that maybe a little uncomfortable for somebody in your shoes to hear?
Actually, I've had the chance to spend time with both of those gentlemen, and I know where their heart is. And where their heart is they want to protect the best capabilities in the defense industrial base. They've made some assertions early on that they didn't see a lot of consolidation at the top tier. There could be some consolidation in the coming environment in the tiers below the prime contractors, because I think this, you know, that's going to be a natural outcome of the sequestration cuts.
Mm-hmm. As those cuts continue, and we don't have any reason to think they won't at the present time, do you see some predictability, at least in the top line numbers, if those cuts stay in place, that maybe wouldn't be there if they go away?
Well, I think you've hit on the key point that this whole industry is desiring right now, and that is certainty and predictability in the numbers. The Department of Defense produces a 5-year defense plan. If it's a sequestration plan, we at least know what the numbers are, and the hard choices will have to be made about which programs stay and which programs get changed and which programs get upgraded versus new. So having that certainty in the passage of a budget would be certainly welcome. And I know the department feels the same way as industry, because, you know, that uncertainty is affecting them as well.
What opportunities would that create then for you to be able to serve your customer better?
It allows us to have more certainty in terms of the investment that we're going to make. We can be more focused once we know what are the priorities that are going to endure in a lower budget environment. And to the extent that we have a meaningful conversation between government and industry, we can really begin to, you know, get our energies focused in the right direction. That's what's going to have to happen in this environment.
Because that might seem like an obvious question, and yet it doesn't. If you look at the action that we're seeing, which is none, it doesn't really appear that part of it is sinking in among decision makers on the Hill. And that's why I wanted to go there and make sure that I understand that there really are ramifications to this that don't seem to be obvious on the surface.
No, there are ramifications. And I think that, the leadership of the defense committees up on the Hill have an appreciation for this. To some extent, they're being swept along a little bit by the tide of what's happening now, you know, in terms of the current impasse between the two parties. But at the end of the day, I think, you know, Congress has a good sense of what the priorities should be. The uniform leadership has an obligation, as does the civilian leadership, to give them those priorities and the budget documents that go forward. And then at the end of the day, you know, we come up with a mutually agreed on path. Certainty would be good on both sides of that fence. And honestly, I'd like to see the leadership up on the Hill be assertive about what are the things that are needed for the future.
I know it's hard to separate out the concepts of sequestration and the shutdown right now, but that aside, what's different about dealing with the Hill today than it was, say, 10 years ago, especially vis-a-vis the committee structures, the style of leadership, the back and forth between the parties and all of those kinds of things?
Yeah, I don't think the committee structures have changed all that much, or the way in which the department transmits its information up. What has changed, I think, a little bit is that there's not enough of a meaningful dialogue going on in an unpressurized environment. I would characterize today's condition as a very pressurized environment where leaders on both sides are distracted from coming to real decisions about real programs and making sure that the dollars are lined up appropriately. That is in part what's being sacrificed with, what we're going through today.
Some of the things that I hear from the Hill are, for example, earmarks are gone, and so there's no way to trade stuff back and forth. I mean, there aren't really deals to make anymore to the extent that there used to be. Those kinds of things were especially prominent I had a gentleman tell me yesterday, a retired admiral, say, when Ike Skelton was chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, stuff happened. And it wasn't a reflection on his leadership per se, but just the way that deals could get done at that in the past that don't seem to happen today.
Yeah, no, I think that is certainly a changed condition. And I know that, you know, there are folks on the Hill who will point to a particular thing that was an earmark, which was, now it's a bad word. but things that were earmarks that turned out to be actually great capabilities that were brought forward. You know, there's always a little friction between a president's budget and the congressional viewpoint of what ought to be procured. But, you know, that's part of the stew in which, you know, we try and bring forth the best capabilities. And I think where we end up is actually a pretty good spot.
What will we see beyond some of the budget things that are obvious? What will we see a year or 2 years or 5 years from now that will make you say, you know what, we managed to come out of this okay. This didn't turn out as badly as we thought, and we can proceed both as a company and as a department and a nation in a positive way.
Well, if I could maybe just sort of zoom it up a level, not only do we want some stability in defense, you know, funding and budgeting, because that will give some certainty and allow people to actually manage programs in a productive way. But there are a host of other issues that ought to be addressed. You know, trade reform is an important issue. You know, having some reforms of the ITAR regulations, the trade and arms regulations that give U.S. companies an opportunity to compete in international marketplaces is an important thing. Addressing the corporate tax rate is an important thing. Addressing education and STEM education, right, for an industry like ours, having young men and women able to come in and be a part of this industry is an important part. There are a lot of big issues that need to be addressed, and, you know, all of those are part of a well-functioning government and industry partnership and dialogue that allow those things to happen.
There's a whole lot more I'd love to cover, Dave, and I'm just out of time, but I'm very grateful for you being here today. I've enjoyed this conversation a
lot.
Thanks,
Francis.
Dave Melcher is the Chief Executive Officer and President of Excellus, and my conversation with him will be archived later today at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Industry chatter every Thursday in the 4 o'clock hour on Federal News Radio.